Chapter 7, Athena and Medusa. She believes that she was born without the ability to feel love, that she is destined, by the circumstances of her birth, to be cold and emotionless and alone. Bursting from the skull of Zeus, she was born neither from passion nor love. Neither conceived her, and so she can conceive neither. Pallas Athena is born fully grown, steel-eyed and iron-strong. Athena is born, and no one weeps. She has little patience and little love for the rest of her family, those she is not constantly exasperated by, such as the exuberant twins, Apollo and Artemis's smiles bright enough to blind. She cannot bear to be around. Hermes is wise, but greedy, and she won't stand his avarice. Hephaestus, he's different. He doesn't smile often, but he has kindness in his eyes and cleverness in his hands. Athena sits beside him in his forge, and he does not avoid her or grow tired of her constant corrections. He takes her criticisms of his work silently, either taking them and reforming his works, or ignoring them without ever giving any sort of explanation. She likes his silences, his large, dark eyes, likes the way he built himself better legs, instead of trying to get new ones fashioned for him. Zeus could have done it, as could his brothers, but Hephaestus did not ask. Aphrodite is born as she was, and for a moment Athena thought she would no longer be alone, that she would have a sister of her heart. But Aphrodite is the personification of love and passion, and does not struggle with their absence as Athena does. Her new sister's coming is a double blow. The goddess is beloved by all, coveted by all, pursued by all, including Hephaestus. Athena doesn't believe the loveliest woman in existence will choose a malformed god that does not even have a throne on Olympus. But she is wrong. The gods compete for her, offer her castles and servants and all manner of extravagant gifts. Ares campaigns the most aggressively for her hand, promising all sorts of things that no sane man would barter. Hephaestus offers a single copper rose, fashioned from his own two hands. Aphrodite goes home with him, her throne on Olympus, empty more often than not, becomes adorned with simple copper flowers. Athena tells herself she did not want him anyway, and forces what's left of her heart to turn to stone. Medusa is a simple village girl. She has thick black hair she wears in braids, dark skin, and startlingly green eyes. Many call her beautiful, but she does her best to hide it, wearing simple gray dresses and letting no makeup adorn her face, allows not a single glittering necklace around her neck. She is clever. Her father is a farmer, her mother a midwife. But she thinks she could be more. She becomes a priestess of the goddess Athena, where she's educated by other priestesses, her now sisters, Stheno and Euryale. Her attempts to be plain are not successful for long. She catches the eye of Poseidon, a god so tremendously powerful that her knees shake whenever he looks at her. Medusa does not leave the temple often, terror clutching her heart whenever she catches sight of Poseidon waiting for her at the edge of the village. She does not go to him. She hopes he will stop waiting. One day a messenger comes to the temple, sweat-soaked and eyes wide. "Priestess Medusa," he gasps. "Please, come with me. My wife, she's having a difficult birth. The midwife said to come to you. You must help us." Medusa wavers. She is not a disciple of Artemis, but her mother trained her well. Theirs is not a large village. If she refuses to help, if she places her fear over this almost mother's needs, she is not fit to call herself the priestess of any goddess. Lead the way, she says, swallowing down her fear and lifting her skirts to follow the man out of the safety of the temple and into the village. The birth is long and hard, and she and the midwife are only partially successful. The mother is saved, but of the two children who grew in her womb, only one still breathes. The father thanks her even as he touches the cheek of the babe they could not save, and Medusa tries not to wonder if they would both have lived if she had not hesitated. She does not think so, but knows the possibility will haunt her regardless. He offers to walk her back, but she declines, unwilling to separate him from his new family, and makes the long walk to the temple alone. She's almost there when a man appears, easily walking beside her. His eyes are sea storm blue and his skin tanned, tall and thick with rippling muscles.
I've been waiting for you,
he says, mouth tilted up at the corner. Medusa stares, heart in her throat, and can think of nothing to say. So she runs. She's on the steps of the temple when a thick arm catches her around the waist.
Not so fast, Poseidon murmurs,
lips dragging against her neck.
We've hardly had the opportunity to become acquainted.
We can't, she says desperately, unwilling to struggle and risk angering him. We are at a temple of the Virgin Athena.
Only the steps. He reaches beneath her skirt. She won't mind. It's all right, isn't it? You're such a pretty thing.
She bites her lips to keep from crying. Poseidon is the god of the sea, and she is merely a mortal woman.
No. She whispers,
sending up one last plea to her patron goddess.
No, I don't mind.
Athena is furious. She has no patience for Poseidon's misdeeds on the best of days, but her priestess in her temple. She has not the power to kill a god, but she's eager to teach him a lesson. She goes storming into his palace, and all his servants go scurrying when they see her.
Lady Athena,
a soft, amused voice greets.
What a pleasant surprise.
She turns and glares at the smiling Amphitrite. She never knows what to make of this woman. She's the personification of the sea itself, and is closer to a being like the great Mother Gaia than she is to a goddess. Yet she's content to be the wife of Poseidon, to be the sea he commands. Do you know where your husband is? She demands.
Always, she responds,
still with that same pleasant smile. And Athena feels a chill she can't explain go down her back.
How may I help you, Lady Goddess?
He owes me a recompense. She snaps. He raped one of my priestesses in my temple. I demand satisfaction. Amphitrite smiles, and Athena is reminded all at once that she is in the middle of the sea, in the middle of Amphitrite's domain. This is not the place to cross her.
If it is satisfaction you seek, it is not my husband you should be looking for.
Athena opens her mouth, but Amphitrite cuts her off.
Tend to your priestess, Lady Goddess. Nothing you seek is here to find.
Athena is too wise to fight a battle already lost. She leaves the palace empty-handed. Medusa sits in a hot spring, legs pulled to her chest and her chin resting on her knees. She has not told Stheno and Uriel of the events of last night.
How can she? When they will surely toss her out if she reveals she's no longer fit to serve in a temple of Athena the Virgin. Did you bleed? Her head snaps up and she's staring into cool gray eyes. My lady, she gasps and hurries to press her forehead to the rock, prostrating herself as best she can in the hot spring. I asked you a question, Pallas Athena says. Tears gather in her eyes, and Medusa blinks them away. No, my lady, he was gentle. The words feel sour in her throat, but they are true. He was not rough with her, did not bruise her as the tales say he likes to do, did not leave her bleeding. Only with a vague soreness that would be easy to ignore if it had any other cause. Don't be ridiculous, Athena says harshly, grabbing her chin and forcing Medusa to look at her. There is nothing gentle about what he did. Be still. I will make it so that neither he nor any other man will ever touch you again. Dread settles in the pit of her stomach. Medusa had not liked Poseidon's hands on her. Much of her skin is scrubbed raw from where she tried to scrub away the phantom sensation of his touch. But she had not planned to remain a priestess forever. She had one day wanted a husband and children of her own, and that desire was not something Poseidon's actions had managed to change. But Athena is a goddess, and she is merely a mortal woman. Thank you, my lady, she says, and closes her eyes. Whatever she does, Medusa hopes it will at least not hurt. Athena is in one of the great libraries when Aphrodite settles beside her. She forces down the instinctual swell of bitterness at the sight of the goddess and says, Aphrodite, you should have told me you were coming. If I had, you wouldn't be here. The other goddess retorts, and Athena keeps her face blank against the entirely accurate accusation. I know you have a temper, sister, but was not your treatment of your priestess a little harsh? It's hardly her own fault that she caught the eye of Poseidon. It takes a moment for Athena to realize who she's talking about. My transformation of Medusa was not a punishment, but a gift. Aphrodite snorts. Some gift. I wouldn't normally interfere with your affairs, but the girl has been praying at my temple for months. Turn her back. So that another man may make prey of her? Athena snaps, stung in a way she refuses to show at Aphrodite's chastising. I think not. The way she is now, no man will love her either, she says. Why do you deny her happiness? Athena slams the book shut that she was trying to read, thoroughly incensed. You stupid girl, why would she ever want a man's love after what Poseidon did to her? Not everyone is you, Pallas Athena, Aphrodite says, something cruel in the curl of her mouth. Not all are so willing to turn all that is capable of causing them pain into stone. She knows. Athena supposes it was inevitable that the goddess of love would know what used to lie in Athena's heart, but her fists clench anyway. Did you tell him? My husband remains as oblivious of all but his machines as ever, she says. Return Medusa to her former form. Athena is not willing to be pushed around by a flowery, half-rate goddess who wages no wars and wins no victories. I refuse. I did right by my priestess. Aphrodite shakes her head, but leaves her at long last. Medusa doesn't stop praying to Aphrodite, no matter the long years that her prayers go unanswered. She keeps her snakes covered in a tight head wrap, and they sleep willingly on top of her head. In the temple, her gaze is of no concern, for her sisters were not men and therefore could not be turned to stone. But every time someone came calling to the temple, She hid in her room and refused to come out, terrified of turning some well-meaning traveler to stone on accident. A wounded man stays at the temple, a hero with the mark of the gods on him. Stheno demands that Medusa tends to him, says that she's the best healer of the three of them. He's out cold and god-touched besides, Stheno says impatiently, dragging Medusa from her room. You won't turn this one to stone. Medusa gives in, tending to his wounds, careful to keep her eyes downcast in case he awakens. He's a beautiful man, the only one she's seen in a long time. His skin is a rich bronze, his hair thick and black, and his cheekbones are high, his lips full and soft, as Medusa discovers when she carefully skims her fingers over them. His name is Perseus, Uriel tells her. Perseus, she repeats, and flushes all over. She goes to him in the night and sits beside him. At first, she only watches him, waiting for his wounds to heal and for him to awaken and leave. But days pass, and he heals, but slowly. She starts talking to him, describes her days as a child, tells him of her parents, of training to be a midwife, of how she eventually rejected that training to become a priestess of Athena. Days pass to weeks. And she speaks of Poseidon, of the gift, curse, her sisters say, when they think she cannot hear them, Athena gave her, of the future she coveted and has now lost forever. She holds his hand as she talks, traces the lines of his hands, and both dreads and hopes for the day that he awakens. The day comes. She hides in her room and sits with her legs to her chest, just like on that day that Athena came to her. There's footsteps, and then a knocking on her door. Medusa, a deep voice calls. Are you in there? It's Perseus. She slowly uncurls and walks to the door. She does not open it, but presses her forehead against it. She wishes she knew what his eyes looked like. If you're in there, I thank you, Medusa, for tending to me. I would not be alive if not for you. I can never repay you your kindness. He stands there, waiting, but she cannot bring herself to speak to him. Okay, he says, softer this time. It's okay. You don't need to say anything. I hope we meet again, Priestess Medusa. She hasn't cried in a long time. She's not surprised to realize she's crying now. Days turn to weeks, turn to months. She does her best to forget the man she never truly met. Then he returns. She's sitting in the library when Uriali comes for her, telling her she's needed in the main room. She barely catches sight of him before she bolts, hurrying to leave before she accidentally kills him. Uriali blocks her way, glaring. You will not turn him to stone, Medusa. Go. Priestess Medusa, he calls out with that same rich voice. I'm wearing a blindfold. Our gazes will not meet. Please, do not run from me. She takes a deep breath, forcing her heart to calm and her limbs to stop trembling before she can make herself turn and face him. She takes lead-laden steps until she stands in front of him. He has fresh scars from when she saw him last, and she aches to touch them. He holds out a small box to her. Please know that these are yours, no matter your answer, Priestess Medusa. They are not bargaining chips. They are a gift. Thank you, she says automatically, confused. My answer to what? He smiles. His lips look even nicer like that.
Lady Medusa, I heard you all those nights you were by my side. All those long hours when your voice guided me back to the mortal realm. I have traveled the world, and I have yet to meet a woman as extraordinary as you. I would take you for my wife, Lady Medusa, if you are willing.
Her knees buckle and his hands wrap around her elbows, holding her upright.
I can't, she chokes out. I can't, I'll kill you.
The box in your hands holds a pair of eyes, he says softly.
Take off my blindfold.
It can't be. He can't be saying what she thinks he is. She raises a trembling hand and removes the blindfold. Where his eyes should be, there is only emptiness. There's minimal scarring, meaning they were removed with intentional precision.
If you take my eyes for your own, you will no longer have to worry about turning people to stone. I doubt they are as lovely as yours must be, but I wish for you to have them nonetheless. I wish for you to have the choices they provide, whether you are my wife or not.
Medusa carefully transfers the precious, precious box to one hand and grabs the back of Perseus's neck with the other, pulling him down and pressing their lips together. He wraps a careful arm around her waist and pulls her flush against him. He's warm and solid, and his mouth is soft and pliant. He's everything she ever hoped being held by a man would be. Her hair covering falls off, and when they break apart, he's laughing. The snakes, unbound, are fully grown now and drape nearly to her waist. They reach out and brush against him.
Friendly, aren't they?
He asks, holding up a hand for their inspection.
Can I take that as a yes, Lady Medusa?
Yes, she says, and kisses him again, just because she can. Athena sits high on a roof, watching Medusa hang laundry in the baking summer sun. Perseus's brown eyes fit perfectly in her face, and Athena's eyes are drawn to the swell of the woman's stomach. There's a shift in the air beside her. Come to rub my ignorance in my face? Aphrodite sighs and leans so they're shoulder to shoulder.
Dear sister, I would never.
They sit in silence for a moment, until Athena can take it no longer.
I know you must think me cold.
Aphrodite bursts into laughter, and Athena is startled to silence.
Your temper runs hot enough to burn all of Olympus to ashes, she says cheerfully. Cold has never been a word I would use to describe you. Stubborn, of course. Petty, most certainly. But never cold.
I'm the only goddess without a lover, she says blankly.
Because all know of Artemis and her women, of how Hestia uses her vow of chastity to deter suitors and not much else.
So, Aphrodite says, I do not see why that matters. Poseidon beds more people than any of us, and yet he runs as cold as the ocean depths he lives in.
Athena stares, wide-eyed, and admits something to her that she's never admitted to anyone.
I don't think I was born with the capacity to love anyone.
Her sister smiles, soft, and says, Often love is sacrifice. Neither of them look where Medusa takes her blind husband's hand and places it against her stomach. His laughter is bright and cuts across the air when he feels his child move.
That is an art you know well, sister.
For a single moment, Aphrodite's fingers tangle with hers, and there's warm lips pressed against her forehead. Then she is alone once more.